Morning, everyone. As David said, my name is Lori Peek, and I'm in the Department of Sociology at Colorado State University, and I have nothing to disclose. Today, I'm going to present a paper that I wrote with two of my graduate students at CSU on displaced family adjustment in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. So in the aftermath of Katrina, we saw that approximately 1.2 million persons were displaced from their homes. And while the vast majority of individuals who were displaced as a result of Hurricane Katrina ended up in the Gulf Coast region, so within about a day's drive from their former homes, persons displaced by Katrina ultimately ended up in every state in the United States as well as in Puerto Rico. And about 14,000 former Gulf Coast residents landed right here in Colorado. And just to give you sort of a sense of the scale of this displacement, at one point we had Katrina survivors in every single county in the state of Colorado. However, most of the Katrina evacuees settled in our two largest cities. About 8,000 persons were here in Denver, Colorado, and about 3,000 more were in Colorado Springs, and the remainder were spread throughout the rest of the state. And in this study, I focused on Katrina evacuees who were in Denver. And so sort of the most broad purpose of this study was to look at family adjustment in the aftermath of the storm. And specifically, I was interested in exploring rates and modes of adjustment between parents and children within households and trying to understand what did that look like. And also trying to understand what were the factors that either aided or hindered adjustment to this context that is so drastically different in terms of demographics, climate, culture, and many other characteristics that really separate Denver, Colorado from New Orleans, Louisiana. And so the data collection for this study occurred over about a 3-year period between October 2005 and October 2008. And the participants in this study, this is part of a broader study that I've been doing here in Colorado looking at displaced persons, but today I'm going to specifically draw on the data where I have information from entire families. And so in this particular sample, I've been following 23 families over this 3-year period, and I interviewed every adult who was in the family first, and then I asked permission to interview every child in the family between the ages of 5 and 18. So the sample was predominantly African American, but also included white and Latino families who were displaced here. And the primary methods for this study include multiple in-depth interviews. So I interviewed every parent and every child in that sample of 85 at least 3 times at 3 different time points because I was interested in change over time and this question of long-term adjustment, and also engaged in observation. So what I'm getting ready to present here is an inductive model of family adjustment. So this means that what I'm presenting emerged directly from all of those interviews that I collected and the analysis. And this model includes 5 different stages that I'm going to present. So the first stage is what I've been referring to as the shock stage. And so during this stage, families were unified and protection and comfort was paramount. And so families cited several reasons for why it was that during this period they were so tightly bound to one another. So one of the most frequently cited reasons among persons who were left behind in the disaster was that they had to stay together for survival. And so Russell, who was an African-American father of 2 daughters, who was stranded in the city of New Orleans for 5 days, he said, "I really thought we were going to die, but we made sure and stuck together. I would not let my girls out of my sight." So oftentimes it was parents speaking of this sort of profound need to keep their families together, but children also spoke about this need as evidenced by the following teen in my sample. So Greg said, "I became the protector of my family. When they pointed guns at us, I told my mom, if we stay here, we are going to die." And ultimately, Greg, as well as his mother, when I interviewed her, they both said that she was sort of in the state of shock, and he was the one who prompted them to get out of the convention center, to leave, and to seek safety elsewhere. So there were several strategies that families relied on during this period. So one was refusing to separate during evacuation. And given the fact that over 5,000 children were separated from their families in the aftermath of Katrina, this was significant. Also, families engaged in altered routines. So a mother and a father said the following, "You know, this is a big house, a nice house here in Colorado that they had. All of the kids have their own space, but they choose 9 times out of 10 to be sleeping all together. They just want to be together more after Hurricane Katrina. They'll stay together either in our bedroom or in my daughter's room. At night, Cody will come sneak in the bottom of the bed in our room. It's okay for now. I think we all just want to be together." And so parents said that while they understood that routine was incredibly important and necessary, they understood they needed to establish routine in their households. They also, during the shock stage, really were willing to be a little more flexible and to do different things to keep their families together. And then finally, here in Colorado, we also saw during this stage that families quite intensely attempted to recreate culturally familiar patterns. Now, what happened soon after the shock stage, which lasted somewhere between 1 and 3 months, was that parents and children began to move in quite divergent directions in terms of their adjustment here. And in particular, what happened as parents started moving in one direction and children moving in the other, that there started to be more conflict, more tension within households. And so for parents, after those first couple of months passed, they moved into a prioritizing safety stage. And as a result of this stage, where parents were most concerned for the safety and well-being of their children, they said, "We need to stay put here." Now, that sort of idea was influenced by several different factors. So one was that during those early months, parents really felt a lack of options for return to the Gulf Coast because of lack of housing, lack of finances perhaps to even get from here in Colorado 1,500 miles back home. But in addition to the lack of options for return, there were other reasons that families said they wanted to stay here, or parents said they wanted to keep their kids here in Colorado. So one of them was that they really observed positive aspects of life in Colorado. So parents use words like the following. They observe better schools, cleaner environments, more efficient services, and less corruption in government was something that was actually quite frequently referred to during interviews. Moreover, several parents talked at length about the lack of hazards in Colorado as compared to the Gulf Coast. And indeed, they were correct in their assumption. Louisiana is pretty consistently ranked 5th or 6th in terms of hazards by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, while Colorado is number 46. And parents were intensely aware of this. One mother said, "There are no hurricanes here, no earthquakes. I checked that. That's why I won't live in Golden, Colorado, because a fault line goes right through there. I'm not taking my family over there." So she settled 20 miles away in Littleton, Colorado. Okay. Now, as the parents were moving in this stage of really prioritizing safety, what was going on with the children during these early stages was an intense feeling of missing home and a strong desire to return to the Gulf Coast. They weren't able to quite as readily see the positives associated with living here in Colorado during these early months. And so Desiree, who was 14, captured this like sometimes only young people can. She said, "Because the whole Katrina thing had me depressed. So I tried to find every excuse in the world to go back home after that happened." So some of the things that were particularly problematic for children during this early stage was the loss of the familiar. And I should say, it isn't that these things weren't problematic for the adults as well, but during their early stage, they were more likely to try to repress that and to focus on the positive. Children, on the other hand, were much more likely during these early stages to talk about how much they missed. Also, lots of stressful resettlement experiences. So everything from being in really crowded households, unfamiliar neighborhoods, and in schools that were demographically quite different as well as had quite different curricular activities than their former schools. Also, a lot of uncertainty really impacted the children quite significantly. So Erica said, "I thought for so long that I was going to go back home. So why make friendships with these people, long-term friendships, which aren't going to be long-term?" Now, over time, what started to happen is that parents started to move in a downward adjustment trajectory. And so during the confronting reality stage, what happened with the adults in the sample was that meeting basic needs became increasingly difficult, especially for single mothers, and they began questioning much more seriously whether they really could make a go of it here in Denver, Colorado. So some of the things that really affected the difficulties during this confronting reality stage was the cost of living here, which is on average about 2 to 3 times higher than what most families were experiencing before the storm. Problems with finding secure employment, affordable housing, childcare, and a real disruption of support networks. And we've documented this extensively elsewhere in our work. Now, what started to happen with the children as the parents were becoming increasingly struggling with staying here is that the children were feeling more settled and more thinking as Denver as home and wanting to stay. And so one of the big things that helped children in the aftermath of the storm was being able to reconnect with friends and family. And so consider the following. Calvary was 9 years old when I first interviewed her in October of 2005. And one of the things she said was that I am scared all of my friends may be dead. At the time, a month and a half after the storm, she had no idea where any of her former classmates were. Now consider what she said about a year later, or several months later. My friend Becca, she was like, Calvary, make a MySpace. And she made it for me in December. Since December, I found like all of my friends. I found 95% of them already because MySpace, everyone has one now. So people that you haven't talked to since Katrina or before Katrina, you can find them on MySpace most likely. And so technology played this incredible role in the lives of youth, and youth actually transferred this to some extent to their parents, which also helped them. Also, other things that helped children was starting to build new and positive relationships with peers, as well as with teachers and other supportive adults, especially through the new schools they landed in here in Colorado. And the schools and extracurricular activities provided several things for these young people. So one was a sense of routine and normalcy. And finally, the final stage in this is reaching resolution. And so this is really about asking, should we stay or should we go? And 18 of the 23 families in my study ultimately did decide to stay here in Colorado. And ultimately, it was the parent, it was either the mother or the mother and the father together who made the decision to stay here in Colorado. And that decision was first and foremost shaped by parental concern for children's well-being. But it was also shaped by children's desires, and that's something that I think we all too often overlook, how important those desires are. And so in conclusion, a few key points. So first of all, is that recovery continues to be the most understudied phase of the disaster life cycle. However, increasingly we have had more rigorous and more extensive studies of familial household recovery after disaster. But one thing that I would argue, most of the family recovery literature that is currently available relies on head of household interviews. And more often than not, that head of household is an adult male in the household who is interviewed. And so I would argue we need to start looking not just at one person within the household and not just one perspective, but instead we need to start looking within households. We also need to remember that child and parental adjustment is not linear, and instead it may vary drastically across time and may follow divergent trajectories. And finally, it's important to consider the perspectives of both adults as well as children. Thanks so much for your time.